Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, this is always the exciting part of the talk because I've got no idea what's going to come out, so it's kind of interesting to see what might happen. I dedicate this talk to Isan Dorsey and to my teacher Zanke Blanche Hartman and my other teacher Kathleen Williams and to all of you who are also all my teachers. Blanche, my teacher, always said she only had one teaching. And if you're on Facebook, by the way, I posted this yesterday about my teacher just having one teaching. And the teaching is, just this is it. So that's the teaching for today. Just this is it. Did everybody get that one? Okay. Well, we could have an early lunch. I was talking to one of the wonderful residents the other day and was talking about the fact that we're all Buddha. And he just didn't believe me. The fact is, with our practice, when we're sitting and practicing, although, of course, practice is everything we do, not just when we're sitting. But when we're sitting, there's nothing actually to get because we already are Buddha. And the problem is that people think that Buddha is some kind of perfect being, you know, and we couldn't possibly be Buddha because, you know, we're not really perfect. We've all got something going on. Something's wrong with us. You know, we couldn't possibly be Buddha. And I think that's a terrible mistake and misunderstanding. The fact is that just the way you are, in that saying, just this is it, that means you too. If you don't accept the way you are right now, then you're not actually right here. Because there isn't anything different. There's no perfect person sitting over here. If only I was a little bit better, I would be this perfect person with the nice hairdo and some makeup and maybe some jewelry sitting right there. And every word out of my mouth would be gold. And of course that's not true. So just this is it means just as you are right now. You are already realized. There's nothing to actually attain. This is it, just this, just the way you are. Whatever you think of yourself, it doesn't really matter. Just the way you are right now is it, just this. Of course, we get dragged off that a lot because we start to believe in what we're thinking. You know, I am great. I am terrible. This is Mike. You know, this is somebody separate over here. You know, and there's a separate person over there called Chris. So every time we get caught up in that thinking, we're away from that original self. You know, it says in some of the teachings, the authentic self. It talks about your face before you were born. What's that? I mean, it all sounds kind of confusing. But the authentic self is the one who doesn't get dragged off into believing this, that, or the other thing. So that is the Buddha. That is the person who's sitting right here. And actually, nobody's getting to go for lunch unless they realize they're Buddha. So...
That's incentive.
Huh?
That's incentive. That's good incentive.
Yeah. No lunch unless you realize you're Buddha. So, in all the teachings, in fact, the sutra we just read, It talks about no body, no mind, no colour, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, all the rest of it. And that sounds a wee bit daft. Well, of course there's a body. Here it is. Right. But we can just be with what is without having to add anything extra to it. That's the heart of the teaching. Just this the way it is. That's the way that you can see Buddha in yourself. Every time you look in the mirror, you can see Buddha. Of course, this just sounds like, you know, well, maybe Jana sees Buddha everywhere. You know. Maybe she's just deluded. Maybe so. However, it's very important to take this very seriously, of course. Okay, who's this?
Buddha.
Buddha. Good grief, really? Is it really Buddha? I suppose it could be, but, you know, it can't be the perfect Buddha because his or her legs are, like, permanently crossed. You know, and it can't be Buddha because actually he can't get the mudra together. He can't do that lovely hand posture. His hands don't work that way, you know. And you can't be Buddha if you can't sit on a cushion with your legs all pretzeled up. That can't be right. And you can't be Buddha if you're sitting on a chair. Oh. And of course, you can't be Buddha if you have desires. You know, if you're drawn off into desire for things like food or sex or a cup of tea or something. Well, that can't be Buddha because you've been drawn off. But those things just arise in everyone. They're not permanent. I mean, of course, Buddha probably didn't have much sex because, you know, neither male nor female, neither one thing nor the other. So,
That red robe looks a little suspect.
Do you think the red robe makes a little bit? Yeah.
It's like a bathrobe.
Have you ever looked at what we're wearing? Yes, well. So, perhaps I see one or two of my students here today. Would one of them like to explain how this is Buddha, in fact, how this is the whole universe? We do have one guy who loves doing that with his socks, but unfortunately Mark's got bronchitis, so he's not here today. Come on, go for it. Bronchitis. Okay, how is this the whole world? Because there's no separation. That's, of course, one of the aspects of being Buddha, that we're actually connected with everything. So how on earth are we connected with everything?
Well, we have a nice bathrobe. Somebody took the time to make this bathrobe and sew it, looks like. And I don't know what the source material is here, but it looks like somebody took some time. And that person, I imagine, works very hard for a living, and I think they're interconnected with this Buddha because they probably spent a lot of time of the day creating things like this for other people in order to just get by in the world and make a living. Probably don't make very much. And what else do I see here?
Where does this stuff come from that it's made of?
This stuff?
Where does this stuff come from that it's made of?
Well, I was just feeling it. It feels like there's maybe seeds in there or something. And I was squishing it, so I'm wondering what kind of seeds that might be. And they're kind of crunching in there. And what kind of plant that came from. And where that plant grows. And how it's harvested, and so there's a lot that goes into this little Buddha. There's a lot of people, there's a lot of natural resources that internet connected with a lot of other things. How's that?
Excellent. So in other words, everything we look at is completely interconnected to everything else. Mm-hmm. So this is the teaching that the Buddha gave us of no separation, mm-hmm. that we're absolutely connected to everything else. And who was it said to see the world in a grain of sand? Who was
Blake.
That? Blake, thank you, Blake. So our practice, in order to realize our full nature, our authentic self, our Buddha nature, is to be able to look at everything the way Chris was talking about that Buddha. Everything, Dogen talks about the whole moon and the entire sky are reflected in a puddle an inch wide, or even in a dewdrop. And we are those dewdrops. Everything came together on this whole planet to make Joe. Joe just didn't suddenly arise all by himself. He had ancestors, and they had ancestors, and so forth and so forth. So if we actually just focus, use our practice to focus on what's right in front of us, that's a complete practice. Because if I just focus on this, this is the whole universe also. There's nothing separate. This took, you can imagine what it took to make these glasses. So if I can focus on when I'm making food, for example, if I can simply be with what I'm making, there's a complete practice right there. And the only thing that pulls us away from realizing that we are the authentic one person connected with every other so-called one person, the only thing that stops that happening is the fact that we keep believing in things that we're thinking. Any thought is actually extra. I had a stack of books like this. I like to do what I call fertilize the field. And I had a stack of books like this to prove this to everybody. I had all the great writers. I had Dogen and Suzuki Roshi and Alan Watts, who I'm very fond of. But I think the teaching of this is actually beyond words. It's simply focusing on whatever it is we do. I did bring a couple of bits and pieces, because sometimes it's hard to believe, you know, someone's sitting there telling you something, you might want to hear it from somewhere else. Does anybody know this one, Trust in Mind, Xin Xin Ming, written in the 6th century? I'm never very good with facts, but this is actually, this is what I had to teach on when I was the head monk. And so I'm fairly familiar with it, and the very opening lines of it are just what I'm talking about. There's about 20 different translations of it in here. The great way is not difficult if only one avoids picking and choosing. Once you stop loving and hating, it will enlighten itself. Or we could say, the great way is not difficult, just don't be attached to preferences. Cut off all likes and dislikes, and it is clear like spits. And that, of course, is amplified in the Great Wisdom Beyond Wisdom Heart Sutra that we just did during service. So whatever is right in front of us can be our practice. We don't have to, as it says in one of the sutras, we don't have to go off to the dusty lands. We don't have to travel off somewhere. We don't have to move from right here. Because right here is where the realization lies, right here in this very body. And we haven't got time to waste, not just because no one's leaving until we all realize this, but because of impermanence. One of the great marks of our existence, of course, is impermanence. We'll never meet like this again. We'll never have the same collection of people together again. Everything is going to change. We're all going to die, sorry, but we are. We're all going to move on. So impermanence is one of the great teachings and one of the great encouragements. In Scottish, we have a great teaching on impermanence. It goes like this. On yonder hill there stood a coo, must have moved, it's no there new.
Translate.
On yonder hill there stands a cow. It must have moved, it's not there now. Impermanence, absolute impermanence of everything. So it's important to really work on this. I don't think there's anything else really worth working on, you know? Not in a, I'm going to attain this. As it says in the sutras, take the backward step that turns the light inwardly. That's the way. There's nothing outside here that's going to give you the answer. There's no teacher going to give you the answer. No other person's going to give you the answer. You can only realize yourself sitting with yourself. It's called settling the self on the self. And of course the Buddha codified some of this in the Four Noble Truths. Have people heard of the Four Noble Truths? A wee bit, maybe? It's okay if you haven't. Why would you? Well, the Four Noble Truths in Scottish, the first one is, it's always something. And in English or American, it's, there is suffering. But in actual fact, the word that is used in the old translations is dukkha, which sounds a bit like what it is. Oh, dukkha. And dukkha means a feeling of not being complete, of not being okay with how you are right now, of a feeling a kind of dissatisfaction. You know, you're just not, you know, it's just not quite right. And so that's, there is suffering. Or, as we say in Scotland, there's always something. There's always something going on. And then the second noble truth is, well, what's the cause of that? Why? Why are we suffering like this? Anyone remember the answer in the second noble truth?
Tana. Tana.
Tana.
Desire, craving.
Uh-huh. Anybody else?
Attachment.
Attachment to...
Me.
Self. Yes, again, it's that belief in the self. And that's the cause of the suffering, that here I am, you know, and I can't get it right, or I'm going to do this. Belief in that self. And then, of course, the third noble truth is... There is a way. There is a way. And the fourth noble truth is, here's the way, the Eightfold Path. But it's said that the greatest cause of our suffering is that second noble truth, that we're stuck on ourselves. But the thing is, we often don't know ourselves. We only know our idea of ourselves. And that's why we practice. When you sit, you'll notice that all kinds of thoughts go through your head. This, that, and the other, this, that, and the other. If you can just let them be, let them be, let them be, then you might get a glimpse of just this self. And then you can see the face of Buddha. Because this is Buddha sitting right here. And it's not something to go out there and find. You're already it. It is already you. The sheer wonder of not being too caught up in thinking is absolutely incredible to me still. Like, I'm very fond of the two cats here, Bodhi and Mui. And the other night, Bodhi came into my room, sorry Mike, and sat there looking at me. And at first I was thinking, oh, come and get a treat. Come up on the bed. Come and do this. Come and do that. And she just sat there and looked at me. And then I just started to look back at her and realized, wow, you know, this little creature sitting here, we think we know about it. We think we know this, that. We call it Bodhi. We call it a cat. But that little creature just sitting looking back without any desire, without any need to do anything, was the whole universe sitting right in front of me. And then she moved. But I really want to encourage everybody to try to have this, what we call right view, to see everything in front of you as the whole universe, and to see yourself that way. Because if we really, really saw that, we would simply walk around struck dumb. Excuse me. Look at those trees. You know, I like to go out after dark and sit with a tree and just sit still. And it helps because, you know, you can't see so much. And there's not quite so much to listen to. But I like to go out and just sit down on the earth, and sometimes I put my hands in it and rub it around a bit and just let things settle down. And then the amazing, the awe of trees growing. I mean, how incredible is that? You know, of the water sitting there in the lake, how marvelous. How did that happen? I mean, to me, it's a sense of awe and wonder, you know. And I feel the same way when I look at people. I mean, my goodness me, how did this happen? You know, how did we get to be here? And of course, the answers are not very important. It's that feeling of awe and wonder and gratitude that we actually get to sit here for even 5 minutes. I remember near the end of a 7-day meditation one time, Paul Haller, who's a teacher at San Francisco Zen Center, we were all sitting there. I think it was the last night, and we were all sitting there kind of relieved, you know, whew, tomorrow it'll be over, you know. And suddenly, in the dark, he suddenly said, "This breath is your last breath." And you could feel people going, and then he said, "The next one's a gift." And in actual fact, they're all a gift. We don't know where from, but every single breath. We couldn't buy another breath. Nothing that you've got, nothing that you could pay, nothing will give you another breath. And each second of existence is just like that. I found a lovely quote from Jeanette Winterson, who's, good Lord, I thought it was Foggy. Jeanette Winterson is a writer who lives in England. She's English. And if you haven't read any of her books, I can recommend Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit, which is about her fundamentalist Christian parents trying to, various methods when she was young to stop her being homosexual, to beat that lesbianism out of her. And her books are absolutely incredible. Some folks who have gone through great suffering like that have enormous understanding and compassion. They made it into a movie, actually. And they actually bring in like all these Christian folks, and they surround her, and she's lying on the ground, and they're, "Devil, get out! Devil, get out!" That kind of thing, you know. Luckily, it didn't work. She's an absolutely wonderful writer, and I found this that she wrote on the wonderful internet. They say that every snowflake is different. If that were true, how could the world go on? How could we ever get up off our knees? How could we ever recover from the wonder of it? And the Buddha said, where there is perception, there is deception. And if you sit zazen, meditation, you'll know that what we just chanted, when it talks about form, feeling, perception, formation, consciousness, is about how we create the world. So when we're sitting, something arises, that's the first part, form. If you can leave it there, that's very peaceful. But usually as soon as we perceive something, we go into, I like it, I don't like it. There's feelings. That colours our perception. I don't like that person. I'll never like that person. Formation, that person's a bad person. Consciousness, now I know that person's a bad person. So we've got the tools of realization right in our hands. When you're sitting, and as I said, not just when you're sitting still, but every action of body, speech and mind, you have that opportunity to leave it right there at form. What would that be like to walk through the world without... Have you ever checked that out and you get on the bus, for example? I have always had an ambition to write a book called Muni Meditations, because I was living in San Francisco when the Muni runs the buses. Have you ever gotten on the bus? Or in fact, try it right now. If you just let your eyes wander around the room, I bet it's really hard to look at people without judging them, without thinking you know something about them, just by looking at them. And there we are, lost in confusion already. So if we can stay just at form, or even slightly before that, but that's kind of tricky. If we can just leave things as they are, without trying to perceive, without trying to get into mental formations, then we can see what's really there. If I can look at somebody, Doug, and just, there's Doug. Right. Without going into, there's Doug, look at the way he's sitting, I kind of like his mudra, you know, is that a black robe he's got on? Well, that must mean, and I'm off, you know. If we can stay present in every single activity we do, doing one thing is doing all the practice completely. So staying right here, I really, really encourage everyone to practice that way. Whether you're making a cup of tea or sitting staring at the wall, it really doesn't matter. Can you stay right here? And that way we can see reality. That way we can see what's authentic. Otherwise, we're just creating all of this. We're just making all of this up. As soon as you start into, well, perceptions, formations, consciousness, you've got it all made. And it's not, it's you everywhere. So bringing it back to just this. It sounds really, really simple. But I know that most of you have sat zazen more than once, probably, and it can be challenging. But certainly, certainly worth it. So I just want to encourage everyone on that one point. To stay right here. In the Buddha, when he was asked direct questions like, what is the self? You know, there's the kind of general relative truth, well, this is the self and I'm sitting here and all this kind of thing. And then there's the absolute truth, well, this is just part of everything. But both of those are beliefs. And our Zen practice is called the middle way. Don't go over that way, don't go over that way, the middle way. It's a bit long for just this, isn't it? What, anyone got the time?
We've got about 10 minutes.
10 minutes?
Yeah. Oh.
So much to say, yes. Well, let me see. Well, I have a little bit of writing here from Gengetsu Junsei. And Gengetsu Junsei says, everything as it arises without the interference of discursive thinking is this, is just this. let me just scoot through in case there was something wonderful that I haven't mentioned. Then I really would like to open it up. Oh, of course, Rumi. Rumi. Where's that one? Ah. I'm very fond of this one. Excuse me for moving my leg. By the way, if you're uncomfortable, please move and be comfortable. There's nothing more holy about sitting still and being in pain. Go on. I have pinched nerves in my neck, so every now and then I have to commit the terrible sin of moving around. So this is one of my favorite questions from Rumi. The poem is called Who Says Words With My Mouth? All day I think about it, then at night I say it. Where did I come from? And what am I supposed to be doing? I have no idea. My soul is from elsewhere, I'm sure of that. And I intend to end up there. This drunkenness began in some other tavern. When I get back around to that place, I'll be completely sober. Meanwhile, I'm like a bird from another continent sitting in this aviary. The day is coming when I fly off. But who is it now in my ear who hears my voice? Who says words with my mouth? Who looks out with my eyes? What is the soul? I cannot stop asking. If I could taste one sip of an answer, I could break out of this prison for drunks. I didn't come here of my own accord, and I can't leave that way. Whoever brought me here will have to take me home. Ah, this poetry. I never know what I'm going to say. I don't plan it. When I'm outside the saying of it, I get very quiet and rarely speak at all. And just one more, Rumi. And I know you've heard this one before, but it's one of my favorites. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there's a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. So, if you want to remember your authentic self, if you want to see that face from before you were born, practice, 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 practice. And the heart of the practice is just being with what is. It's okay, I mean, it's all right to have thoughts about it. We just don't believe them. My teacher used to say, don't believe everything you think. And I say, don't believe anything you think. It's just extra. So, let's throw this open for everybody's words of wisdom. And see what comes up.
Question?
Yes.
Attachment to self. I see this recurring me and friends that I talk to on a daily basis. Because I care about them and because I see that also in myself, I see their great suffering. Every single one of them are due to the attachment to themselves. If it is not about me, but it's about somebody else who's going through things like that, what can I do to help?
Share the practice with them. That's why once my teacher Blanche kind of showed me this, and it took a long time, of course, you know, because I had a very bad self-opinion. I thought I was worthless, useless, all the rest of it. And It was very hard for me, but she said to me when I started practicing, oh, you must want everybody to love you. And I said, no, I'd just like to be okay for me. I just want to see me as okay. And when I began to see me as okay, which is Buddha, then you do, you begin to notice that in everybody, in a lot of people. And that's why I went out on the streets and, you know, didn't go out wearing robes or anything. Just went out and started sharing this, because suffering comes from clinging on to, I need this, I need that, I won't be complete without this. I'm not a good person unless I achieve that. You know, I haven't done anything with my life. What's going on? You know, I wish I looked like her or him, you know. But when you can let that go down, you can actually show this really easily to other people. I think I did this on the last talk when I said, is everybody listening to my voice? Can you raise your hand if you're listening to my voice right now? Can you raise your hand if you're listening to my voice? You're not listening. So everybody can hear a noise going on in the room anyway. And now, I put their hand back down. Okay, raise your hand if you're suffering from something that's happening right this second. Okay. What's happening right this second?
I've got ascites.
Pain?
Yeah.
Now, who was I talking to a minute ago? Oh, there's the man that knows the difference between pain and suffering. There is pain, but it doesn't have to be suffering. Pain is pain. Suffering is, why me, Lord, why me? Anyone else got something happening right now that's causing suffering? Yes, ma'am.
Between my shoulder blades, my muscles are tensing up, and it's causing incredible pain, which always seems to be happening.
I know it's a hard one, but if you can stay with it, then it's pain, not suffering, because you're still smiling, and I know you have a lot of pain. I bow to you for all your effort. So basically, to share it with other people, you can simply do that and point out that if you're sitting quietly just here, you might have a pain, but there's nothing happening right now that's causing suffering. Whereas if I start thinking about, oh, my mother used to go on and on at me, oh, I got a lip, yeah, oh, that happened in the past, oh, or the future, oh, it's going to be awful, I'm going to be homeless again, I'm going to be ill, I'm going to die, you know. But right now, so I just encourage everybody that finds even the slightest wee bit of relief, the slightest little bit of joy in practice, just share it with everybody else. You don't have to call it Zazen, you know, and you don't have to wear funny robes or do anything like that. It's just a very simple kindness to share it with other people. And there's many different methods. I know I've talked about can of soda meditation before. You can use whatever's right in front of you. Something to focus on. You can focus on anything. What are you doing with that? Yes.
We seem to be living in an increasingly complicated world, and it's taking more and more of my consciousness to just get by, you know, figure out how the rent's going to get paid and organize my day into shopping and doing all the million things you have to do. And it's really easy to just get sucked away into all that. And I don't have a lot of tools to how to deal with that. I do try to use any downtime I have, like the muni bus or standing in line at the store or something, to try to just bring my attention to the moment, you know. But it's, other than the downtime, it's really hard to not get just caught up in the whole craziness of the world.
Well, I think that's why the teaching of whatever's right in front of you can be that focus, because you don't have to stop when I was still in the city, I was asked to train all the maintenance staff in the SRO hotels how to take a pause, how to have a pause. And of course, when I started talking to them, they weren't interested in stopping work. I mean, why would they stop work, sit down and stare at nothing? I mean, it's just not very appealing, you know. So how do you practice in the middle of that? You know, how do you practice when you sit down and look at how much money do I have? Will this cover the rent? You know, that's a practice too. If you can focus, simply focus on the one thing that's right there, and then it'll be the next thing. Blanche, my teacher, her doctor was such a busy man that when he walked, he was leaning forward all the time. But, you know, he couldn't, you know, he looked like he was rushing everywhere he went, because of course he was in a big hospital and it was really busy. And so she told him that his practice would be just trying to be aware every now and then of his feet touching the ground. And that brought him into the moment. So it doesn't have to be, you know, meditation beads or sitting on a wee cushion or even having time to stop. It's very important to be able to do this in the middle of everything. Mm-hmm. And maybe you should get yourself a wee Buddha doll too. I sometimes just feel my fingers rub together, you know, if I'm getting carried away. I just do little things like that, you know, or even feeling the pain. Blanche was very old-fashioned, and when she got carried away, she used to sit full lotus. And when she was drifting off, she'd haul on her leg to give herself some pain, because, as you know, it sure keeps you present when you've got pain going on. You know, there's no way to drift off. So whatever you can do, you know, feel your hands, feel your breath, whatever it takes. Just go ahead and do that, to practice with it. Any more questions? Okay, does anybody now think that they're not Buddha?
I'm hungry, so yes.
you know you're Buddha now. Is there anybody that hasn't quite got that one today? It's a matter of belief. You're perfect just the way you are. That was Yunyang. You're perfect just the way you are. And we could all use a little bit of improvement, you know. But how about just staying with we're perfect just the way we are? Even if